We've been following this donkey through Scripture again. But this time in our little journey, we're mixing in elements that are associated with what we are calling holy fuel. It's that fuel that takes you on the long haul. It's that fuel that powers your pursuit of God when you just don't feel like getting up because somebody took an hour of sleep away from you. It's that fuel that tells you you're in this for the long haul. And we started with the knowing donkey, and he taught us the importance of knowing who God is, the provider. Last week, we met the very intense little forgiving donkey that reminded us that grace carries us forward. And today, we blend in a different kind of donkey. It's called the discerning donkey. And so for this, before we can actually talk about the donkey, I kind of got to do some stage setting for you. Now, if you're doing the 365 reading challenge, you're going to say, wait a minute, I read this story this week. Imagine that. We're going to preach in a sermon that you actually read a story this week. Good thing somebody didn't plan it that way, right? But this is where it starts. I am in Joshua chapter 9, if you wish to turn that way. And I am going to start in verses 3 through 5. However, when the people of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they resorted to a ruse. They went as a delegation whose donkeys were loaded with worn-out sacks and old wineskins, cracked and mended. They put worn and patched sandals on their feet and wore old clothes. All their bread or their food was supplied was dry and moldy. Then they went to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal and said to him and the Israelites, we have come from a distant country. Make a treaty with us. So, you know, news travels fast, and the walls of Jericho went tumbling down. Ai didn't go so good on the first campaign, but the second campaign, they trapped the people in there, and they conquered the city. So Joshua's got a pretty good track record. So realizing they were the next on the map, these people decided, well, we're obviously not going to win the battle, at least not on the battlefield. Maybe we can win the battlefield of the mind. Not a mine, of the mind. And the Gibeonites, and these are people that are living in the land that God has now given to the Israelites, who were on the other side of the Jordan, and they are systematically taking out city after city. They arrive, and they're arriving on donkeys, which were usually used for longer journeys. If you're going to go somewhere, you might have walked, but they arrive on donkeys. But before they got there, they said, okay, we've got to sell this. So they have worn out sacks. So, you know, their burlap sacks are all tattered, like they've been traveling for a bit. Their wineskins are cracked, something that's been thrown on the back of a donkey and has been subject to the heat of the desert and no moisture. And so you know how that works. Things begin to crack and turn, and so that they've got that. And they took their shoes, and instead of wearing their nice Sunday shoes, They took the ones that had been shoved in the closet where they'd been cutting grass for a while, and they were all stained and worn and beat up, and they put those on their feet like these are shoes that have been making a journey. And they even got to the point of their bread. Instead of packing the nice, fresh-baked yeast rolls that you can dip in honey, and it's just like you understand what manna is at that point. They take the stuff that's a few days old, that's kind of crusty and moldy, and they're trying to put on an image. And when they arrive, everything looks authentic, but looks can lie. They've come not in honesty, but because they're afraid. And deception, hoping that Israel won't notice. They just won't look that hard. And then we're going to get to the verse that we're going to focus on today. I am in verse 14, and it says, but they, being the Israelites, did not seek the counsel of the Lord. And on that one simple verse, the entire story changes. Everything looked good up to this point, but unravels right here. Because God's people make a decision without divine direction. Really? Was it that important? I mean, it all looked really good, right? So what I want to do today is just take a moment. Now that we've got our scene set, I want to take a look at how discernment just begins to slip away one step at a time. How we can guard against making some of those same mistakes and take a real hard look at the consequences of what making decisions looks like if you don't include God. So I'm back at verse 7, and I just want you to see right off the bat, they had, it all looks good. But the Israelites said to the Hivites, but perhaps you live near us. So how can we make a treaty with you? So the Israelites knew what they had been told to do. What was their instructions? Make no treaties with the people in this land. Level the cities. Take everything. Don't leave anything undone. Finish it all. So these people arrive, and their first reaction is, well, let's stop and think about this for a second. I mean, maybe you live near us. You see, Joshua's first reaction, he had a moment of suspicion. And that was the spark of discernment beginning to flicker. Something doesn't add up here. I mean, they're saying they're coming from a long ways away to make a treaty with us. Well, we're only after this land. Why would somebody come all this way to make a treaty with us when all we own right now is two cities and the stuff on the east side of the Jordan? They're trying to think 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2 in this point. There's something else in the equation that doesn't make sense. And we need to understand God often gives that quick check in the spirit before deception takes hold. A lot of times God waves the stop sign. He waves the flag. He's saying you're headed somewhere. Danger, Will Robinson. You're going the wrong direction. And that suspicion kicks in, and we begin to look at all of this, and we begin to think, well, something's off. But Joshua sensed something was off, but he didn't follow that up with this word that we call prayer. Yeah, something's not right. Something isn't working the way that I thought it was going to work, but I'm not sure that I need to pray about it, do I? I mean, I'm a smart folk. I can look at things. Suspicion without prayer leads to self-confidence, not spiritual clarity. That's what we're going to find out. When all I am working off of is my own instinct, what I can see, what I can touch, what I can taste, what I can feel, what I can do, what I am working off of is it makes me very confident in my skills. We get to this point that, yeah, I can take on everything if you just give me long enough to look at it. And God says, that's not the way this works. You see, how often do we sense something isn't there, but we rush, isn't right, but we just rush in anyway? Have you ever made those kind of decisions? Man, God has laid it there in front of you, and he said, look, something's not right. Stop, and let's have a conversation. We're like, that's okay, God. I got this. I can fix this. I can handle this. God, this is an easy one, okay? This is like falling off a log. I can figure it. And so we rush ahead with our decision. And that's what we need to remember. The sermon starts with instinct, but it matures when we actually begin to stop and inquire of God. Now, we know why we don't want to inquire with God, right? Because that means that God might change my mind, right? God might show me some things that I hadn't even thought about yet. And that might mean that I don't get to do what I want to do, because isn't a treaty a lot better than a war? I mean, wouldn't it be easier if God had just told them, look, I want you to go into the land. We're going to conquer a couple of cities. And after we conquer a couple of cities, everybody's going to be afraid. And then you can just go city by city and make a treaty with each one of them. And then you don't have to fight any wars. Doesn't that sound a lot simpler? I mean, isn't compromise how we're supposed to do this? But that's not what's happening. Joshua's flicker of discernment could have become a flame. But I just want you to watch how it begins to fall apart when he doesn't actually ask God's opinion. Verses 8 through 9. "We are your servants," they said to Joshua. But Joshua asked, "Who are you and where do you come from?" They answered, "Your servants have come from a very distant country because of the fame of the Lord your God." They played their role perfectly, folks. Listen to what they did. They expressed a desire to be servants. Ooh, free labor. Yeah, or cheap labor. But somebody else to do the work for me. And I'm sure at that statement, the Israelites' ears began to perk up because, man, we've been traveling for 40 years. We've been lugging our luggage and we've been lugging our stuff and we've been moving from place to place and we're tired. And look, fresh meat. And they're coming and they're saying, "We will be your servants. We'll carry the load for you. We'll take care of it." They claim to be from a far off land, but notice what they don't do. They don't exactly lie. I mean, define the word far off. Would you consider Gypsy Hill far off? Well, I can't actually, I have to do some walking to get there, so I guess depending on who you are. I live in Waynesboro. Would you consider Waynesboro far off? Well, I don't know. I could probably bike that in, you know, an hour. But we were in Charlottesville for 17 years. Would you count Charlottesville far off? I don't know. That's getting a little far. There's a mountain between it. I grew up in Lynchburg, and so that's a little further away. Would you consider, define the word far off? See, they're being very clever in what they're doing. They're saying, "Oh, don't worry about us. Don't pay close attention. We're from a far-off land. You'll never see us probably again after we make this treaty," which is another thing that should have rung some bells. If they're so far off, why do they need a treaty? But again, they're ignoring because they're listening, because then they even throw in the stick that probably, "We know your God. We've heard the stories of what happened in Egypt. We've heard the stories about the Red Sea. We've heard the stories about how God gave you manna. We've heard all of these stories. We heard the story about what happened in Jericho. We heard the story about Ai. We've heard all the stories, and we believe in your God." And man, they sold it. They absolutely sold it. And the thing that you need to remember amongst all of this, Joshua questioned them, but he absolutely, positively, never questioned God. As you read through this story, what you shall see is that God, is that Joshua questioned the Gibeons, people from Gibeon, but he never, ever stopped to question God. He asked the right questions, but he asked the wrong people. I mean, he asked all the things he should be asking, that, hey, maybe you're not who you say you are. Maybe you're not from where you say you are. Maybe you're lying to me. But he never asked God those questions. He was thorough, and here's a good word, in diplomacy, but silent. And devotion. He did a good diplomatic move. He signed a treaty that meant no war. But when it came to what God said he was supposed to do, he left somebody out of the conversation. Joshua gathered information when he needed revelation. He dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, got all the information that he thought he needed. He looked around, and the problem is he didn't need more information. What he needed was some revelation from God. See, discernment is not about clever reasoning. It's about dependence on God. Now, this is a big moment because a lot of times I can figure a lot of things out. Believe it or not, I'm a pretty smart guy when it comes to some of this stuff. I usually have pretty good instincts about people. And I can make huge decisions in a hurry, but it's not about whether or not I've got it all figured out. Remember, who was supposed to be leading the army of God? We met him, you met him back in Jericho if you were reading through the stories. It's the angel of the Lord. This wasn't Joshua's army. This was God's army. So imagine Sergeant Joshua is about to take the troops into war, and he's not consulting General Jesus. He's leaving him out of the conversation because he thinks he's got this all figured out. And when questioning replaces praying, we start leaning on what we see, and that's where our story starts to pivot. Here's chapter 9, verse 14 in its entirety. The Israelites sampled their provisions, but did not inquire of the Lord. 12 short words that carry a world of regret. If we miss this, we miss the entire message. They tasted the evidence. Now, you got to get the picture. They pull out the bread, and they're like, well, it's kind of moldy. It's a little stale. Ugh. This is terrible. They had to come from somewhere far because nobody would pack this kind of bread. They tasted the evidence, and they trusted their senses. They looked at the bags. They looked at the wineskins. They looked at the sandals. They didn't even look at the donkeys. I don't know what, but they looked at everything. They tried to do their due diligence, sampling the bread, testing the evidence, but not once did they say, stay right here. Leaders, let's go pray about this. Let's go get on our knees before God and let's see what God says about this situation. You see, the deception wasn't in the bread. It was in their blindness. I used to have a friend that used to tell me all the time, sometimes there is a subtle difference between God's elevator and Satan's mine shaft. Both look like a way up or down, but both make a promise of movement. Only one of those will lead to life. The other, not so much. And without discernment, we can just mistake the mine shaft of our enemy that will lead us to doom for the open door and the promise of God. When prayer is missing, I just want to let you know something. The price is coming. That is where verse 14 becomes the hinge in this whole narrative, because everything builds toward this moment of neglect. They did not inquire of the Lord. Everything unfolds from its consequences. If they had just stopped for a minute and prayed about it, the story would look extremely different. One unprayed decision can produce years of unwanted obligation. Every donkey in this series has carried something: knowledge, forgiveness, and now we get to this idea of the burden of discernment. And when the curtain is pulled back, we get to start seeing the consequences of our decision making. I'm in verses 16 through 21. 3 days after they had made the treaty with the Gibeonites, the Israelites heard that they were neighbors living near them. So the Israelites set out on the third day and came to their city of Gibeon, Kephrah, Beeroth, and Kiriath-Jearim. And I didn't name these cities, and I probably didn't pronounce them right. But the Israelites did not attack them because the leaders of the assembly had sworn an oath to them by the Lord, the God of Israel. Now, stop for a minute and think about it. Not only did they make a treaty with these people to say, okay, you can be our friends, they sealed it by saying in God's name. Did anybody ask God if he was in that treaty? Or did they just sign it? The whole assembly, so Israel is upset now, the whole assembly grumbled against the leaders, but all the leaders answered, we have given them our oath by the Lord, the God of Israel, and we cannot touch them now. This is what we will do to them. We will let them live, so they swore to, we will let them live so that the God's wrath will not fall on us for breaking the oath we swore to them. They continued, let them live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers and service the whole assembly. So the leaders promised to them was kept. So 3 days later, the wool was pulled from over, and they get to see how everything's going. And I do want you to see Joshua kept his word, integrity intact. But the damage was done. You see, discernment delayed becomes deception exposed. Joshua kept his word, but again, this is what God's going to do. While God cannot redeem our missteps, he would rather prevent them, but there was no going back. When we fail to seek God's direction, we are serving up what we were meant to subdue. Israel was called to rule the land, but they became bound by their own unprayed promise. Ponder this for a second. How many times have we made a decision that we get in this moment? Yeah, we're sitting there and we see that thing that we want and we really can't afford what we want, but then they say, we can sell it to you in so many monthly payments with just a little bit of interest tacked to it. And we sign the paper and we don't realize that those monthly payments later on are going to take out a budget that God maybe had other plans for. You begin serving the debt versus subduing your future. How many times have you made a decision with somebody only to realize that the somebody wasn't honest with you, and that thing that goes wrong there begins to impact other relationships that you're trying to deal with? You see, this is what we get ourselves into. Their mistake cost them dearly, but God turned even their deception into direction. The donkeys that carried deceit now carry a divine lesson for us. And if you think this one little mistake ended during Joshua's lifetime, I'd like to pull the curtain back a little further, because this deception goes a whole lot deeper than just, I missed it, God, please forgive me. I want to fast forward. I am sitting in 2 Samuel chapter 21, and Israel is now under King David. All right? Joshua, the elders, and the original treaty makers are long gone and buried. We are hundreds of years into the future. Yet, the consequences of this one unprayed decision still kind of wander about. You see, there is a famine that reveals some unfinished business that is going on. David does what Joshua didn't do. He goes and he inquires of the Lord. And you know what the funny thing is? God answered him. He said, why is the land suffering in famine? It's really simple. It's because of Saul. His bloodstained house, he put to death the Gibeonites. So Saul comes along later after all of this had happened, and he says, hey, I like that land. Maybe this is where I want to build my summer home. And he goes and he takes the land by force. He broke God's word. Because remember, this oath was sworn in God's name. And there's a sobering irony when you begin to pull at this really hard. Joshua teaches us how discernment is lost. How did it get lost? I made my decision without asking God, is this the right decision? I picked the job. I picked the mate. I picked the person that I thought God wanted me to be. I picked the location I'm going to live. I did it all, and I never once, got on my knees and said, God, is this where you want me? Is this who you want me with? Is this what you want for my life? I made all of my decisions based on the plans that I had put in place, and I made my decision. Discernment is lost. Saul teaches us how discernment is ignored. Yeah, that all happened in the past. He made that treaty with Joshua. He made that treaty with those people. Those are not me. I'm in charge now. Saul was the king, and he said, this is my land. This is my country. And you know what? I want the property, and they're not supposed to be here anyway. God said get rid of them, so I'm going to get rid of them. And he ignored discernment. and he marched the troops into somebody else's territory that God had swore to keep them safe, and he killed them. And God said, famine's coming on the land. David teaches us how discernment is restored. David is looking at this famine that's been going on for 3 years, and he doesn't guess. He said, well, maybe it's because we did this, or maybe it's because we did that, or maybe it's because we're not planting the right kind of crops, or maybe we forgot to water. David said, I have no idea what this, but I know somebody that does. I get the person that I actually need to ask this question of. And it says he inquires of the Lord. That's a big statement. If only Joshua had done that. If only we had done that. Perhaps this is one of the reasons, because David is not a role model citizen. But maybe this is one of the reasons God calls him a man after God's own heart. While he was not perfect, he consistently sought God's counsel. Even when he sinned and it was time to repent, back to his knees he went. So I want to kind of wrap things up by just taking some lessons. Lessons for us today. Not lessons for them in the past. Some lessons for me today, standing here in 2026. What can I put into my life that will fuel it? How do I gain discernment? So let's start with some lessons from Joshua. Even worn out things can deceive if we don't pray through them. Even those tired old things that we think have nothing left in them, they're all out of steam, they're all gone, I can handle this. Even those worn out things, if I don't pray about it, it's probably going to come back with bad moments for my life. Discernment isn't suspicions. It's submission to God's voice. If all you're going off of is what I think, I feel, I see, what I know I can do, if that's what you're, if you're just limited to those parameters and understand you don't have good discernment, you have good suspicion. Discernment starts when you begin to say, okay, God, I see what I see. Now I want to see what you see. I want to see what is it I'm missing in the equation. What have I overlooked? What have I not thought about? God, I don't have all the answers. So now I'm going to come to the one who does have all the answers. Here's an important one. Even good leaders stumble, but they lean on logic instead of the Lord. If you're reading through Joshua, that's where you are right now, and you read through it and you think about all the cities that he conquered, all the successful battles that he had. It says that Joshua did everything Moses commanded from God. It says that he followed the plan perfectly, except for this moment. Except for when he had it standing right there in front of him, he made the decisions. And you know what? It happens to every single leader. I don't know any leader at all that is always right. Hey, parents, I don't know any parent that is always right. As a parent, we've made decisions that we're like, man, I'd like to have that a do-over a couple of times. You get it. You're not going to be perfect in this. So that means even when you make it, then you've got to use a little discernment about your discernment and go and inquire of the Lord, God, what do I do now? Because you know what? This is messed up. Prayer is the hinge that keeps perception from becoming presumption. But they did not inquire of the Lord. If that one statement was missing, the entire story changes. But that's the lesson. So now we drop to Saul and David. We're a few hundred years into the story here, and this is what we get to learn. When we don't seek God, we don't just risk inconvenience, we risk inheritance. If I make decisions with no God included in them, then you understand I'm not just putting that decision at risk. I am not just making something that's going to inconvenience my life later. I literally may find myself bound to a decision that affects my inheritance. Not my inheritance in this world, but my inheritance with God. It affects my ability to serve God because I made a decision in the here and now, didn't ask God about it, and now I'm asking God to bless the things that I'm doing now. And then we sit there and say, God, why aren't you blessing me? God, why is there famine in my land? Well, it's all because you put to death discernment. You marched in and took what you should not have taken. You did not take time to stop and inquire on the Lord and say, you know what? Your blessings are going to be impacted by that. Poor discernment doesn't just affect us. It affects those who come after us. Now, there is a big lesson that we don't want to learn. My decisions today don't just impact me. Since I am a pastor at a church, my decisions impact everybody sitting here in the pews. Since I am a dad, my decisions, whether they like it or not, will impact my kids. Since I am a husband, my decisions will impact my spouse. I did not make one single decision in my life that doesn't have impact on someone else. And if it has that much impact, that much importance, don't you think it's worth a prayer? Don't you think that you should be asking God, okay, God, this looks like a great opportunity. Is it? God, am I missing something? Is this your open door? Or is this another one of those mine shafts that's been placed in front of me and I've thought it all through and I think I got it all figured out. But maybe there's something I'm not seeing. Is prayer worth that to you? See, seek the Lord early or you may have to seek him later. It's just the later is going to have a whole lot of pressure to it. Would it not have been easier if Joshua had just said, take 5 minutes, let's go pray about this and let's make sure to see what God says about it, instead of having to deal with the treaty, having to deal with people that he was now going to turn into slaves, woodcutters and water bearers, having to deal with the fact that they're occupying land, and so therefore they're still going to be putting up their Asher poles, and they're still going to be worshiping their God. It's all going to still be happening right there in Israel's own backyard, because they're not allowed to touch them. And they couldn't convert them. So there they are. They're just going to live there. Wouldn't it have been easier if Saul had went back and actually read the lesson and read the oath and said, I can't have that property. It's interesting. It took three leaders to make one decision before it got made for God. And how did he get made for God? Yeah, the man that sometimes really lived a horrible life said, you know what? I don't have everything figured out, but I got this one figured out. We have a decision to make. Let's get on our knees. Let's inquire of the Lord. And I guess that does bring us to now. Where have you sampled decisions without seeking God? Would you like a notebook to start writing them down? I got more than I can think about. But where have we sampled? Or more importantly, where are we currently sampling? Or more importantly, where are you going to sample without seeking God? How many decisions are you really willing to make before your next life choice? You've got to get it. Pause and pray. Now, this does not mean I expect you to be walking through Walmart and you're standing there at the shelf and you're looking at the aisle that says Crest or Colgate. Let me stop and have a prayer meeting. God does not care what kind of toothpaste you use. God cares that you actually use toothpaste. Okay? Pick your brand. This does not mean that we have to take every little trivial moment in our life and pray, but these are the decisions that are going to shape our life forever. Are those decisions going to God in prayer? When our elders meet and we have to make decisions, are we taking those decisions to God in prayer because it is going to impact our church for generations to come, every decision we make? Unfortunately, a lot of times when we just make our decisions out of our own brain, you know what else happens is we get paralyzed with it. I can't make a decision because what if I make the wrong one? So we sit there and we talk about it 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 until everybody feels comfortable. And we talk so much and we forget, oh, wait a minute. We didn't talk to God about it. Maybe he could have saved us a lot of time because he said, nope, that's a mine shaft. Yep, that's a door. Those are the easy ones to pick out. Let the Spirit show you whether you're standing God's elevator, enemy's mineshaft. Because I'm going to tell you, when you're sitting there looking at the door, you can't tell the difference. How do I know that? Because I picked the wrong door enough times. I am not speaking from wisdom. I'm speaking from experience. You cannot look at that door and see all the way down all the things it can do or will do to your life. But God can. And no, he may not give you the whole details of what's going to happen. He's not going to give you that moment. But what he will say is, hey, look, that's probably not the move you want to make. He just won't give you peace about the moment. He won't let you step through it because you've asked him to get involved in it. Instead, we usually make our decisions and then we lay in bed staring at the wall, at the ceiling saying, what have I done? Man, I wish I could have a do-over. Be discerning. Look at the door. You see, the Gibeonites, the Hivites, or however you wish to address them, well, they came and they looked good, right? I mean, they came on those donkeys and they gave all the evidence, but it wasn't the Gibeons that had the issue. They, being Israel, God's people, did not inquire on the Lord. So maybe we don't get the donkey and all of this. I thought I'd give you a little more modern example. If you have a phone or you have a computer, you download software and apps on your phone. How many times in your life have you downloaded something and when you first open it up, that little box comes up that is the criteria for using the software? How many times do you do this? Yeah. Oh, I got some amens from that one. Yeah, we understand that one. We begin to look at that, and the problem is we've already decided we want the app before we look at the cost. We want what it offers to our life before we look what it's going to cost to our life. We push that accept button because it looks harmless, right? It's just an app. Only discover later we have agreed to something that comes with a lot of hidden costs and maybe our future relationship with God. We realize that we've exposed ourselves to somebody else's lifestyle and we clicked accept because we looked at all the benefits we were going to get and not all the costs it was going to give us. Discernment is a spiritual discipline of reading the fine print by going to God in prayer and using the Spirit that he put within him, within us. When we seek his counsel first, even one path become wise, and the donkey that once carried deception now carries discernment. God working with us, fuel for the long haul.